Okay, we begin here on the bottom of Simon Gil Mohammed Bed, two lines from the bottom. Yesterday we left off with the question that was posed with regards to compensation that one receives for the destruction of Yayin Nesech. We've already discussed the fact that the Mishnah says that one may not receive schar for working with Avodah Zarah or with working with Yayin Nesech. And here you are working with the Yayin Nesech, but you're doing it in a way that you're destroying the Yayin Nesech. So the Gemara concluded that that's fine because you're eliminating the Yayin Nesech in the end. So now the Gemara wants to bring a proof to that. Lema Misayile. Let us bring a proof from a Braita that that is the case. Eino dream im no'oved kuchavim bikilayim. One may not work with the oved kuchavim, hoe, turn over the soil, or dig into the ground with the oved kuchavim when it involves kilayim. Aval ukrim imo, kidedam mi'ute et tifla. But you are allowed to uproot the kilayim in order to reduce the tifla, which is again here the same word that was used by the case of Yayin Nesech. Tifla is something that's tasteless, odorless, but really the Lashon Chazal is used in a very negative connotation. It means things that are detrimental, deleterious. So over here again, kilayim is something that's bad, and you're allowed to reduce, to eliminate the kilayim. So you're allowed to work with them in order to eliminate the kilayim. Over here, there are a number of assumptions. The first of which is an interesting Balei Tosafot that mentions here, we're speaking about an Oved Kuchavim, speaking about a non-Jew, and we're speaking about Kilayim. Why is there any relevance of Kilayim to a non-Jew? Fine, a Jew has a restriction with regards to the Mitzvot Torah, but a Goy does not have that restriction. So the Balei Tosafot raised the issue here and say, Arav Rabbeinu Tam Dachak, he says that the Rabbeinu Tam tried to bring many proofs to the fact that Kilayim and Orla have application by a non-Jew. And all of them we can eliminate or we can reject. But then he says, Rabbeinu Tam finally found his ace, which was a Yerushalmi that says what he says. And therefore, he concludes at the end of that, Balei Tosafot, Shemina Miha, Dorla, Vikilay Akerim, Vichadash. All three of these items, Noagim Bishel Ubdei Kuchavim, Afilu Bechutz Laaretz, Shnoeg Bechadash. And even in Chutz Laaretz, where Chadash is applicable, according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And so here you have an application of Orla and Kilay Akerim, even with regards to a Goy, which is what the Balei Tosafot suggests over here. Then, in the next Balei Tosafot, he says, this sugya here is not a proof. This should have been the biggest proof to the Rabbeinu Tam. He says here, you're not allowed to work with the goy and the kilayim. So that would be the proof that the Rabbeinu Tam is looking for. It says here, you as a Jew are not allowed to work with the goy with kilei akerim. So the Balei Tosafot suggests that that is not the case here, because he doesn't think that it's speaking about kilei hakerim, but rather kilei zraim. That makes a big difference, because kilei hakerim have application both, first of all, in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laaretz, and can have application, according to the Balei Tosafot, to a Jew and a non-Jew. Whereas, when it comes to Kilei Zraim, that only has application in Eretz Yisrael. And once you're in Eretz Yisrael, even if a Goy is working with it, that it may not be the problem of the Goy. And that is the fact that we have a Machloket that we've mentioned a number of times here in Avodah Zarah, as well as another Masechtot. So whether a Goy has the ability to be Maftia the Kedushat Haaretz, when the Goy takes possession of the land here, does the land retain its Kedushah? Or is he Mafkia the Kedushah Taretz? So then, once you've brought it back into Eretz Yisrael, because we're saying it's Kilei Zraim, which only has application in Eretz Yisrael, then you could just explain the Braita, speaking about in Eretz Yisrael, it's a Goy's land, but he has the inability to eliminate the Kedushah Taretz. And that's why there's a problem of Kilei Zraim over here. And that way you have no proof that Kilayim has any application by a Goy. So that's how the Balei Tosafot would eliminate this as being a proof to the Rabbeinu Tam's position. But nevertheless, they do bring the Rabbeinu Tam and the Yerushalmi that seems to indicate that these dinim have application by a non-Jew. Based on this Braita, the Gemara now wants to bring a proof to the conclusion that we reached before, that when a person works with the Yayin Nesech to destroy it, that the schar that they receive for that is mutar. Similar, now, we're going to suggest to the Braita that we just brought, that says that if one is working with kilayim, which is problematic to keep around, if the person works to undermine it or uproot it, then the compensation, then it's mutar for them to be involved in such an activity. Now, you have to make a number of assumptions. That's what the Gemara says here. Savrua, we assume that the Braita is speaking within the position of Hamani Rabbi Akiva. It is the position of Rabbi Akiva Damar mikayim bikilayim loket. Someone who maintains kilayim gets malkot. This is a machloket Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, which we're going to see here, the Tanya Nekesh Vamechape Bikilayim. Someone who is weeding, or someone who is covering over the seeds of kilayim, loket, gets malkot. Bikiva omer, af hamikayim. Kiva says that even someone who sustains kilayim is chayav in the Isra of kilayim. So the pasuk, when it's speaking about kilayim, let's assume that we are following the position of the Bayit Tosfot here that we're speaking about Kilei Zraim. It says, Sadcha lo tizra kilayim. You may not plant kilayim in your field. So the Chachamim take that literally. You can't plant kilayim in the field. In my time with Rabbi Akiva, Amakra, Sadcha lo tizra kilayim, in le'ele zoreya. That's only true of someone who plants. That's the position of the Chachamim. Mikayim inayin. How do I know someone who sustains kilayim also has an isur? Tamalomar, lo kilayim. Kilayim, not at all. You can see on the side already, the Masorah of the Shas is trying to deal with what exactly the language of this should be. But the basic idea, based on the Gemarot that we saw in Makot and Rashi over there, is that the Pasuk says, Bechemtecha, lo tarbiya kilayim. Sadcha, lo tizra kilayim. So you have, first of all, Bechemtecha, you may not have mixed breeding. And then Sadcha, lo tizra kilayim, you may not have mixed breeding in your field. The way that Rabbi Akiva parses the pasuk is, Bechemtecha lo tarbiya kilayim, even though that's an etnachta, that's the middle of the pasuk, he continues to read it like this, Sadcha lo tizra kilayim, instead of starting the second half of the pasuk from there, he starts from the word kilayim. It says, Kilayim sadcha lo. Kilayim in your field may not be. And in doing so, he says that even sustaining kilayim in the field is problematic. So it's a reparsing of the pasuk to take the word of kilayim from the first half of the pasuk and apply it to the second half of the pasuk and read kilayim sadcha lo instead of sadcha lo tizra kilayim. And in that way, you end up with a secondary isur, which is not only planting, but also sustaining of kilayim. Rashi claims that's because of the way the pasuk wrote it. Instead of writing kilayim lo tarbiya behemtecha, it says behemtecha lo tarbiya kilayim, which pushed the kilayim to be juxtaposed to the sadcha lo tizra kilayim. And for that reason, he parses the pasuk in that manner. Ve'ilu, and then the Gemara says, the Me'utei Tifla Shari. In the end, you see that even though there's a restriction in sustaining kilayim, if you're doing it for the purpose of eliminating the kilayim, that it is mudar. So here you see the same idea, that even though you're working there, sustains it in order for you to get there to actually do the work and eliminate it, nevertheless, we allow you to do that whenever there is destruction of the kilayim. So the fact that you're doing it to destroy it permits you to do it, even though you're working and sustaining kilayim in the interim while you're working with the kilayim. And similarly in our case, where you're destroying the yayin nesach, even though you want the kiyum of the yayin nesach so that you can destroy it afterwards and get paid for that, that's not considered to be a kiyum. You have to look at it more holistically, which is that yes, you want a sustaining of the item for a short period of time, but you will destroy it in the end, and that's the purpose of your sustaining it, is in order to destroy it. And Minyona Dioma, the Balei Tosafot have a similar shita with regards to chametz. The Balei Tosafot believe that the mitzvah of Tashbitu only applies when there is a Isur chametz. And so therefore for them, you have to keep chametz into a period of time where there's an Isur chametz. So how can you violate the Isur chametz in order to do Tashbitu? The answer in the end is that the Balei Tosafot should say that if you're keeping the chametz to destroy it, that's not a problem of Bayira, Bayimatzeya. That's not a problem of the Isur Chametz. The Isur Chametz is only problematic when you want the Chametz and you're sustaining or keeping the Chametz for that purpose. But if you're keeping the Chametz in order to burn it, to destroy it, that's not called keeping Chametz. That's not called a violation of the Isur Chametz. And similarly over here, when you are keeping the Yayin Nesach to destroy it, you're keeping the Kilayim to destroy it, that's not called keeping Yayin Nesach. That's not called keeping Kilayim. So now, the question is, what exactly happened over here? So Rashi writes, Afilu Rabbi Kiva. So first of all, Rashi has a girsa in our Gemara of Afilu, which is that not only according to the Rabbanan is it mutar, because the Rabbanan think that sustaining kilayim is not a problem at all. There's no Isur of sustaining kilayim. So for the Rabbanan to work with the Goy to uproot the kilayim, it seems totally fine. On the other hand, when it comes to Rabbi Akiva, who thinks that sustaining kilayim is problematic, you would have thought it's problematic. Afilu the Rabbi Akiva, it's still mutar. Now, why do you want the kilayim to be sustained? Why do you want the yayin nesach to be sustained? It's because you're getting paid to destroy the barrels of yayin nesach. You're getting paid to destroy the kilayim. So if the kilayim is not there, you don't get paid. If the yayin nesach is not there, you don't get paid. So you have a vested interest in these items being around so that you can destroy them and get paid for the work that you're doing. If they're not there, you're not going to get paid anything. So you have a vested interest in them remaining. As you're working through the field, if all of a sudden some storm came along and wiped out the rest of the kilayim, you'd actually be upset. You're going to lose your ability then to finish off the field and make money for it. So you have a vested interest in the kiyum for a short duration of these items. Now Rashi brings over here, what is the violation of kiyum according to Rabbi Akiva? It says, dim zaran acher. Someone else planted them. Ubazev aselahen sayag vageder. The person came along and they made some sort of boundary or fence around them. Kedei lekayiman loke. In order to sustain them, that's why he gets malkot. So now Rashi does something that you would not have expected. I would have said the simple interpretation. This is the way the Oruch explains it, is that what does it mean to sustain kilayim? Sustaining kilayim means that I don't uproot it. I leave it to grow. I leave it to continue growing. That's mikayim kilayim. If you uproot it, doesn't exist. If you allow it to grow, then you're mikayim kilayim. That's the way the Aruch explains it. So why did Rashi go out of his way to say that it's a case where you put a fence around it, you're doing something with the kilayim? The answer is that Rashi's looking for a masa. He's looking for an action. And that is because of the belief, and the Baal Yitzvot second this, Perisha Kuntri, Shasalem Siag Vagader, Bekotzim Gdei Lekayman, V'yafeh Kivein. And Rashi's right, based on the fact that in the Gemara in Makot, Rabbi Kiva believes, life shein bo masa ain't looking alav. When you have a lav that has no action associated with it, you don't get malkot. So over here, if we're speaking about menakesh mechapeh b'klayim lokeh, Rabbi Akiva mer afe mikayim, so too someone who sustains the kilayim also gets malkot. So then how could you get malkot unless you have a maseh? So Rashi comes up with a maseh. He put a fence around it. He did something active in order to sustain the kilayim. The Oruch obviously disagrees and believes that Rabbi Akiva thinks you can get malkot even for a lav shein bo maseh. And therefore the Oruch, as quoted by the Baal Tosfot over here, says, mikayim b'hanachat kilayim ligadel b'tok sadeu. You just let it grow in your field. You don't eliminate it. That's enough. That's called mikayim, and you'll get malkot because it's a lav shein bo maseh. Now Tosfot is now faced with a serious problem, which is, if you explain our case here by the kilayim as a case where you're doing a maseh to be mikayim the kilayim, then it's no longer comparable. So how could you bring a proof from the Braita that we just spoke about, Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva's view is that the Isser v'mikayim kilayim would make it that you wrote sevi kiyumo should be problematic? There's a big difference between the Braita where Rabbi Akiva demands action in order to be chayav v'mikayim kilayim, in our case over here where he's going through the field and uprooting the items, who says that his kiyum there, where he just leaves it in the field until he gets there, or he wants it to be there, how are the cases comparable at all? How can you prove anything from this? So for the Oruch, it's very easy. For the Oruch who said that Rabbi Akiva thinks you're chayav malkot in a case where you just leave it in your field, then the cases are exactly parallel. The case where you leave it in the field, you get malkot. In our case over here, he's uprooting the kilayim and he's leaving the kilayim in front of him because he wants to be able to uproot it. Those are exactly the same cases. You're being mekayim kilayim passively, and that's fine. But for Baal Yad Tosafot and Rashi, who say that Rabbi Akiva only thinks you get malkot by an active kiyum, then how do you prove anything from avalokrimimo kedei demutei tetifla? How can you prove anything in the case saying that it's a case of passive kiyum? So the Baal Yad Tosafot says something that's incredible over here, and it's a huge, huge chiddush that really has major implications. He says, v'yesh lomar, t'mikol makom machshavoto mishavelei ma'aseh. That is, thought makes it into an action. When he takes an action in the end to uproot it. So in our case over here, there's two stages. There's a stage where he wants it to be around so that he can uproot it. And then there's a second stage where he actually uproots it. The uprooting is an action. There he's doing a masa. Now the masa that he's doing is the masa to eliminate it. The Baal Tosafot say that because his thought process is, keep it around so that I can uproot it, then we are mitzaref machshava lemaseh. We connect his thought to the action he takes in the end where he uproots it. And therefore it's deemed that his thought to keep the kilayim around is also a maseh. Devadayim eno ker eno ver. Kevin sheno sesh shu maseh. Because in the end, if he never uproots it, then he's not in violation. Because the only reason that his violation happens over here is because he wants to keep it around in order to uproot it. So if he never uproots it, He's never chayav. This isn't his field. This is the goy's field. The only reason he wants the kilayim around is because he wants to be able to uproot it and get paid for it. So if he never uproots it and gets paid for it, then his wanting it to be around is meaningless. So the Baal Tosfos would say that the two are connected. And so therefore, since you want it around to uproot it, the action of uprooting it will also be assigned to the kiyum, your machshava, your thought to keep it around. And therefore, it will be considered to be a maisa. Avalokem marer shurotzeh b'mashu. And the fact that you are uprooting it shows or demonstrates that you wanted it beforehand. And therefore, will to connect the maisa of uprooting to the thought that you wanted around. Incredible Tosafot that says that the action that does just the opposite of what you're violating in terms of the Isur will be the maisa for that violation. The Akira will be the maisa for the Makshova to keep around or Kiyum Ha Kilayim. Now, the Giva Eger asks, and the simpler way to answer the problem is to say that who needs Malkot over here? Rabbi Akiva says that Mikayim Kilayim, someone who sustains Kilayim, is Lokeh. So yes, in a case where you want to get Malkot, you're going to need a maisa, you're going to need an action. But that doesn't mean when there's a lack of action that you are patur. It means that you won't get Malkot, but it's still also Midoraita. And that's what Mikiv Eger says over here, very easy answer to the problem. Just say that the case here is that he's in violation because he passively left it there. That passively leaving it there, even though there's no maaseh, still is a violation of a din d'oraita. And tifla, the ability to be oker the kilayim, eliminates that iser d'oraita. Why do you need malkot for the case to be relevant over here? The case can be relevant even without malkot. And that's how Rabbi Kiva's question on the Baal HaTosafot, and a much simpler answer to the problem. Again, here you have three approaches to dealing with this. You have the Oruch, who says that Rabbi Kiva believes that passive sustaining of the kilayim is problematic. Again, that's exactly parallel to our case, where he's uprooting the kilayim and leaving it in the interim. So those two are comparable. You have the view of the Rabbi Kiva Eger, which is, maybe to get malkot, you need maisa. But it's still also d'oraita, according to Rabbi Kiva, to sustain kilayim. And that's the comparison to our case over here, which is, sustaining kilayim is also d'oraita. In our case here, when he wants to uproot it, and he wants to sustain it in order to be uprooted, he's violating isur d'oraita. That's only permitted b'tifla, when he's destroying the kilayim. And then the Baal HaTosafot, who have the biggest chiddush, is that Rabbi Kiva requires a maaseh to be lokeh, and then he wants to require a maaseh also over here in the case. And that means that when you are sustaining the kilayim to order to uproot it, the uprooting is the maaseh for the kiyum of the kilayim, which is a huge chiddush. All right, so that's the proof that the Gemara is bringing. We have a parallel case by kilayim to our Yayin Nesach case, where you're permitted to take your salary for uprooting kilayim, even though you want the sustaining of the kilayim in the interim because of the larger goal of eliminating the kilayim, which is in line with what the Torah is asking you to do, is to eliminate the kilayim. So Gemara says, how do you know that it's really Rabbi Akiva? Look, Hamani Rabbonani. It's the Rabbonan who are the authors of this position in the Braita. I Rabbonan, my Iria Okrin. If it's the Rabbonan, why do you have to be in the process of uprooting the kilayim in order for it to be mutar? Afilu kiyume nami shapir dami. Even if you sustain the kilayim, it would be fine. You don't even need to uproot it. Even if you just left it in the goy's field and you worked with him to leave it there, wouldn't be a problem. Achimayiskinan could go to Ovid Bichinam. He's not getting paid to do it. He's doing it gratis. He's doing this pro bono work for the goy. Virabbi Yehuda, and it's authored by Rabbi Yehuda. We saw back on Daf Chof, where the Gemara had three drashot for the pasuk of Lot Techanim. And we have said there, one of the drashot was, Lot Titein Lehem Matnat Chinam. You're not allowed to give them gratis, free items, free work. Damar, Titein Lehem Matnat Chinam Asur. To give them things for free is restricted. Based on that, the problem in the Braita would have been that if you do this for no payment, then you are giving a gift to the goy by being Oker is Kilayim for no payment. Are you allowed to do that? So according to the Chachamim, the simple fact that you want to be Mekayim, the Kilayim, would have been fine as well. The problem we have here is that you're doing it for free and you're not getting paid. The justification for doing it for free to be Oker the Kilayim is because there's a mitzvah to be Oker Kilayim. And that justifies you doing it for free for the goy. So even though you technically can't give him a gift, here we will permit the gift because of the end game, which is that you are Oker Kilayim, which is what the Torah wants in the end. And because of that, we will justify you providing this service to the goy for free, even though in other situations you would not be permitted to do so. Where it says, Mid Rabbi Yehuda, Nishma the Rabbi Akiva. From Rabbi Yehuda, let us now learn to Rabbi Akiva. Just like Rabbi Yehuda says there's a restriction for free gifting, and Tifla overrides it, say the same thing Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva has a restriction against Mikayim Kilayim, let Tifla override it. And then we can learn. Lava Ma Rabbi Yehuda, Suli Ten Lehmat Nat Chinam. There's an Isur de Oraita to provide free services to the Goy. But to eliminate the Kilayim as a justified reason for giving him a free gift, that means we allow you to, quote-unquote, violate the Isur d'Oraita. There's no longer an Isur d'Oraita because of the purposes to oker the Kilayim. So the Rabbi Nami, according to Rabbi Akiva, would be the same thing. Even though Rabbi Akiva believes someone who sustains Kilayim gets Malkot, the Mutei Tifla, Shapir Dami. If you are eliminating the Kilayim in that process, that is fine. Vitulo Mide. And there's nothing more to ask about this. That is a strong conclusion that supports our conclusion with regards to Yayin Nesech. Now, as the Bais Tosafot will point out, the Gemara did not need to get to Rabbi Akiva to do this. Even from Rabbi Yehuda himself, we could have proved the point, which is that from Rabbi Yehuda, who says you're allowed to violate the Isur of Matnat Chinam for Tifla, then in our case, by Yayin Nesech, you're allowed to keep around the Yayin Nesech to destroy it, you should have been able to come to that same conclusion. You don't need Rabbi Akiva to get there. But the Bais Tosafot will point out that the Gemara just wanted to do that because the Gemara already spoke about Rabbi Akiva's position. So the Gemara just wants to conclude that not only is this true within the position of Chachamim, but it is true with even within the position of Rabbi Akiva, because from Rabbi Yehuda we can extrapolate to Rabbi Akiva. So even though it's not a necessary step to prove what we want to prove, the Gemara took that step to show you what the position of Rabbi Akiva is, or how Rabbi Akiva's position would play out in this case. Right now the Gemara moves on to a next question, and we're going to have a series of these questions from the Amoraim that we saw yesterday, that we're sitting together, along with Rav Chia Bar Ami. Hador Yatve, they continued to be there sitting together, Vikama Bailu. He asked them this question. Dmei Avodat Kochavim B'yad Oveid Kochavim Mahu. What is the din with regards to monies that are exchanged for Avodah Zarah in the hands of a Goy? For a Jew, the sale of Avodat Kochavim, which is Asurbana, results in the monies also becoming a surbana. That's something we noted in the last couple of daf, earlier in the Masechta, that when you sell Avodah Zarah, the items that you exchange it for are tofes in the Isur of Avodah Zarah. And that means that there's an Isur Hana'ah that is associated with the monies that are garnered from the sale of Avodah Zarah. The question is for a Goy. Does a Goy have that same din? And the Goy sells his Avodah Zarah, now what is the status of the monies that he garnered from the sale of that Avodah Zarah? Is it considered to be like the Avodah Zarah, the same status as the Avodah Zarah? Or is that already, we call it money laundering, he's been able to clean this object of Avodah Zarah, and the money now has no connection to Avodah Zarah. Mitofeset damah b'yad oved kochavim. Does the money in the hand of the Goy keep or grab the Isra of Avodah Zarah, and then the monies will also be Isra'i Hana'ah? Olo, or maybe not. So Amar Lehu Rav Nachman, so again, amongst the group there, Rav Nachman is one of the individuals, and Rav Nachman provides the answer, and that's why yesterday we saw that their Tosafot was pointing out that this doesn't follow the Rabbeinu Tam's position, that normally the person who was delineated separately is the individual who gives the Chiddush or the answer. Over here you have Rav Nachman, who's amongst the three that were sitting together giving the answer in each of these cases, and we explained why that was yesterday. Mistavra, Demei Avodat Kochavim, B'yad Oveid Kochavim, Mutarim. Seems to me to make sense that when the Oveid Kochavim sells his Avodah Zarah and monetizes it, those monies are Mutarim. Midahanu Da'atu Dekamei Derabba Baravua. Because of a case of individuals who came before Rabbi Baravua who were Geirim, they were about to convert. Amalu zilu zvinu koma de'idluchu betu idgairu. Go sell off, liquidate all your Avodah Zarah, all your Yayin Nesech, liquidate it before you convert. My taima. Why did he tell them to liquidate it and sell it all before they converted? Mishom the kasavar, he must believe, d'mei avodat kochavim, b'yad oveid kochavim. The monies realized from the sale of Avodah Zarah in the hands of an oveid kochavim, mutarim. So if they waited until after they converted, then if they sold the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't do any good for that because the monies would take on the status of the Avodah Zarah, it'd be tofes damah. But if they do it before they convert, then the monies would be free and clear of the Avodah Zarah. So Rabbi Baravua gives them the suggestion to monetize everything, sell everything before they convert. That would be a proof to the fact that when it's a goy, it's not Tofes Damim. When he's a Jew, it is Tofes Damim, and that's exactly the question that we're trying to answer. Now, the Balei Tosafot explained the logic behind that, and that is because the reason that the monies of a Jew take on the properties of the Avodah Zarah is based on the Pasuk of Vayita Cherem Kamohu. Kol Shata Mehayem Imenu Kamohu. Anything that you create through the Avodah Zarah will have the same status as the Avodah Zarah. And that's what makes it the money takes on the properties of the Avodah Zarah. So now that Pasuk of Vayita Cherem Kamohu is Davka B'Yisrael Ne'amar V'lo L'Bnei Noach. That was said to the Jews, not to non-Jews. And therefore the mitzvah or the application of this din is only true by a Jew. It's not true by Ovei Kochavim, because the limud that we have that creates the problem is uniquely associated with the pasuk that is applicable to Jews and not to Bnei Noach. Bnei Noach are restricted in Avodah Zarah, but they don't have the pasuk of Vayita Cherem Kamo. They don't have the pasuk that the monies or that which is created from it will also have the same din. That is the proof Rav Nachman brings from that incident with Rabbi Bar Avuha. The Gemara says, Dilma Shani Hotam. Maybe it's different over there. The came in the date the yure vaday batlo. Maybe it's different over there because since he is intending to convert, he definitely is mevatalit. So here we have the problem that we've seen before, which is that the selling of Avodah Zarah in of itself is not a bitul of the Avodah Zarah. If a goy sells the Avodah Zarah, his assumption is the next goy who buys it from it is also going to worship the Avodah Zarah. Therefore, he's not mevatalit. So that's why selling the Avodah Zarah may not help out, because that item remains Avodah Zarah. And maybe even the monies garnered from it will also be considered to have the Isur Avodah Zarah. So why in this case did he tell them to sell it before they were Jews in order to garner the money? That is because a goy can be mevatel at Avodah Zarah. A Jew cannot be mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a goy. So here, while he was a goy, he had this Avodat Kochavim. If he sells it now, in the past we've noted that selling it doesn't ruin the Avodah Zarah. But here they're in a unique period of time, which is that they're about to convert. And it's clear that they no longer believe in Avodah Zarah if they're about to convert to Judaism. So in that case, when they're selling it off, it's clear that they're mevatel the Avodah Zarah in the sale. And maybe that's why Rabbi Bar Avuha was making the suggestion. Prior to your conversion, sell it off, because then you'll realize the profits from that. You are mevatel the Avodah Zarah when you sell it because you're about to convert and you don't believe in the Avodah Zarah. That bitul of the Avodah Zarah will provide you with the cash proceeds from this item. And then once you convert, you'll have that cash. If you wait till after you convert, you'll be a Jew already, and then you can't be mevatel the Avodat Kochavim. You can't sell it. You're in a bind. So do it beforehand. But in a normal case of Avodat Kochavim, when he sells it and the monies that are garnered for him, maybe those would be Asurim Bahana. So maybe you can't prove anything from this case. Ben Ochanan says that the case by the Ger, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you can be mevatel it. So he said that there was an implicit bitul when he sold the Avodah Zarah to monetize it, and that's why the monies are fine. The problem is that there's no bitul by Yayin Nesef. Yayin Nesef is Yayin Nesef no matter what. Even if you mevatel it, it doesn't change the fact that it's Yayin Nesef. So how do you explain that scenario where he's selling off the Yayin Nesef and monetizing it? Why should that work in that case? So Rabbeinu Chanan says over here, Jesh Lamar, Toloma Yapashutahem, Heter Yayin Nesef Yoter Midmei Avodat Kochavim Techamira Isura. He says the Gemara was clear that when you goy sells Yayin Nesef, the money was mutar. Their question was, when he sells Avodah Zarah, is the money asur? Because the Avodah Zarah is much more chamur than Yayin Nesef. And for that reason, the Chachamim posed their question with regards to Avodah Zarah, and therefore they don't worry about Yayin Nesef or monetizing Yayin Nesef. That for sure the goy can do, and it's mutar. Question is, can he do that with Avodah Zarah? And that's the question that's being asked here, and that's the advice that Rabbi Avuha was giving to them, that you can sell it off beforehand. That shows you that he believed that Avodah Zarah and Yayin Nesef can be monetized and the monies are not asur. Yayin Nesef was a given. Avodah Zarah, we didn't know, and that we were going to prove from the statement of Rabbi Bar Avuha. The truth is, you could have just said to them, why don't you be mevatel the Avodah Zarah? Forget about selling it and then taking the money. Why don't you just tell them they've been mevatel the Avodah Zarah and it will be done? So that's what Bali Tosafot say over here. Mash lo ya omer lehem levatla b'shvira. Why don't you be mevatel it by breaking it? And then they could sell it even after they convert, because it's Avodah Zarah that is batel. They wanted to sell it while it was still intact to garner higher proceeds from it if they sell it to those people that are worshipping the Avodah Zarah. So what the Balei Tosafot are pointing out over here is that If they sell it whole, if they sell it as it is, they're going to garner larger profits from it. If they sell it by breaking it first and being mevatel it, that's not going to help them in this case, because then after they convert and they have these broken pieces of Avodah Zarah, they won't garner the type of profits they would garner by selling it in a whole state. And therefore, Rabbi Bar Avuah is suggesting that they sell it before they convert in its whole state. What about the fact that when you sell it, it's not batel? Shani Hocha, as the Baitos vote note, and we've already mentioned, here it's different, came to Datali Grure. Over here you're converting. Here they clearly are mevatel it because they're in the process of converting in this case. Alright, so you're asking is, I was thinking it while I was saying over the Baal Yatos vote, I was thinking what you're saying here. From here you see that the din of Lifnei Iver lo titen michshol does not have application by a good. A Jew is subject to Lifnei Iver lo titen michshol, which is not only can you not perform an Aveira, you cannot facilitate someone else performing an Aveira. Over here, you're asking, well, if you sell the Avodah Zarah to someone who's worshiping at Avodah Zarah, you're facilitating their ability to do Avodah Zarah. Well, a goy has a restriction against doing Avodah Zarah based on the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, but that doesn't mean that he has a din of Lifnei Iver, Lo Titein Michshol, who says that he has a restriction against facilitating other people doing the Avera. The restriction is simply that he cannot violate it, and someone else does violate it, they're subject to a death penalty. But he has no restriction against facilitating. Lifnei Iver does not apply to the goy. Now, that seems simple, because the Gemara only brings examples of cases of Lifnei Iver where it's a Jew. Now, it's whether it's a Jew towards another Jew or a Jew towards a Ben Noach. In these cases, we always said that Lifnei Iver applies to a Jew, does not apply to a non-Jew. The only way that it possibly could apply to a non-Jew is if you believe there's a Chakira on Lifnei Iver lo titen michshol. So whether it's an independent mitzvah, if that's the case, it cannot apply to non-Jews. Or do you see Lifnei Iver as being what's called a sniff l'chol aveira? It becomes a part and parcel of any aveira. Embedded in any mitzvah in the Torah are two things. The violation of that isser, as well as Lifnei Iver. It's a part and parcel of every mitzvah of the Torah that not only can you not perform the aveira, you also cannot cause others to perform the aveira. If you do that, and you also believe that the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach are subsumed in the 613 mitzvot, then, in a far-fetched way, you possibly could explain that a goy might be chayav in Lifnei Iver lo titen michshol, because it's a part and parcel of every avira. And if the Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach are part and parcel of the 613, then they also have that same din, and then you would have to say that applies to a goy. It's a very far-fetched statement, but it's clear from the Baal Tosfot over here that there is no Lifnei Iver for him selling it off to another goy to worship Avodah Zarah. So based on that, we have no proof in this case of Rabbah Bar Avuah, because we just explained the possibility that a goy who exchanges Avodah Zarah for money, the money would be asur. And this case is unique, because he's selling it off right before the giur, and that's why the money's over here okay, because he's mevatel the Avodah Zarah in the sale, and then the proceeds wouldn't be a problem of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, Elami Ocha, we can prove Rav Nachman's position from here. Israel, Chayen Noshe Be'oved Kochavim, Maneh, he had outstanding credit to a non-Jew of 100 zuz. Umachar avodat kochavim ve'evilo. And so in order to repay the loan, the non-Jew sells his avodah zarah and then pays the Jew. Yai nesech. Or he sells off his yai nesech ve'evilo and pays him off. Mutar. That's totally fine. Aval. Imamar lo himtein li ad shemkor avodat kochavim. Vavilacha. Hang out here. I'm going to sell my avodah zarah and then I'll pay you back. Yai nesech. Vavilacha. Or I'm going to go sell off my yayin esech and I'll bring you the profits. Asur. Then it's problematic. Now, as Rashi points out over here, we already have the proof we need for Rav Nachman, which is the first half of the braita that we just quoted from the Tosefta, which is that the fact that if he liquidates Avodah Zarah or yayin esech to pay back the debts, the monies are totally mutar to you. And that's exactly what Rav Nachman said, that the exchange of the Avodah Zarah, the yayin esech for monies for an goy is not a problem. And that's why the Jew can accept that money as repayment. But the Gemara has a question, which is Maishna Resha, Maishna Seifa. Within the Tosefta, why are some cases Mutar and some cases are Asur? So Rav Sheshet, Seifa, Mishum Davile, Kirotze, Bikiyumo. In the Seifa, he wants the Avodah Zarah to stay around. He wants the Yayin Nesech to stay around. Because the Jew can only get his proceeds if this non-Jew is successful at monetizing his Avodah Zarah as Yayin Nesech. So when he says to him, you know what, hang out here for a minute, I have some Avodah Zarah that I'm going to sell. So when he does that, the Jew is hoping that the Avodah Zarah stays around long enough that the goy can sell it in order to monetize the item and pay him back. So the word say bikiyumo is the problem over here. Bechigri say bikiyumo ki ay gavna mi asir. When you want the item to be kept around in this type of scenario, is that really problematic? That's not. Don't we have a Mishnah? Ger ba'obeid kochavim she'ashu aveim obeid kochavim. You have a convert and a non-Jew who are inheriting their father who has a obeid avodah zarah. The problem is amongst the possessions of his father are items that are asur to him. Avodah kochavim, yayin nesech. These are items that he can't take possession of. If he takes possession of them, then they are asurim behanah. So ger yechol amar lo, the ger could say to his brother who is non-Jewish, tolata avodat kochavim, Vani maot. You take the avodah zarah, I'll take the money. Tolata yayinesech. You take the yayinesech, vani peirot. He can split the estate along the lines of give to the goy the stuff that's asur, and he'll take the stuff that is mutar. Imishibol reshut ager asur. But if he already gets possession of the items and then wants to split it with his brother, then it's asur. So before they take possession of the estate, in that situation, they can split it between them. And divide it up that the goy takes the stuff that's avodah zarah, the ger takes the stuff that is mutar. Once it already comes into his possession, and now he wants to say, listen, I have this avodah zarah, I can't use it, you take it, and you'll give me something in exchange. That's already a barter transaction by which he's garnering the benefit of the avodah zarah that he can't do. Gemara says, wait a minute, Amar Rava Barula, Madnitan Bavodat Kochavim, Hamit Chaleket, Lifi Shvareha. Wait a minute, who says that the case here is Rotze B'Kiyumo? How do you know the case by the split between the Ger and the Obeid Kochavim has to do with the fact that he wants the Avodah Zarah to stay whole? And despite that fact, we say it's Mutar. Maybe it's a case here where he doesn't care whether the Avodah Zarah stays whole or not. For instance, where you have a case where the Avodah Zarah is made out of gold or silver. So then the underlying value of the gold and silver is the most important factor in terms of the value of the Avodah Zarah. So when he goes and says, you take that golden idol, and I'll take the money. You take the Yayin Nesech, I'll take this. Well, the golden idol, if it stays intact, his brother will take it, and he'll take the money. If it breaks and is destroyed, he won't be upset about it, because the gold pieces will have that same value. And it might actually be batel now, depending whether you think the shvarim, when it breaks by itself, or the pieces that are broken, make it into bitel. Over there, he couldn't care less if it breaks. If it breaks, he'll get his value, either because the thing is still worth the same value and his brother will take the gold pieces, or because the shvarim make it into a bittel. So here he doesn't care if it breaks down or doesn't break down, and therefore you have no proof about rutzeh b'kiyumo. Where it says, tinak avodat kochavim. That's true when you're talking about avodah zarah. Yayin nesech, ma'ika the meimar. Over there it also said he could trade the yayin nesech against the peirot. Where would you want yayin nesech where he doesn't care if it's around? Well, if it's not around, he can't trade it. If it's broken, the wine goes to waste. The answer is, Becheres Hadriani. This is what we saw earlier in the Masechta, where it was the earthenware, where they either cooked the earthenware with the wine in it, or they stuck it in it to absorb the wine, and then they reconstituted the wine later. But that means that the Cheres itself had the wine embedded in it. Over there, you don't need the utensil to be whole. Even the shards carry the concentrate in it, so you don't care. The Gemara says that's not true, because there still is a difference. Halo rotze b'kiyumo, shlo yignovu, shlo yovedu. Even if you say that he doesn't care about it being whole, he still wants it to be around, because if they're stolen or lost, then he loses out on his side of the Yerusha. So then you're right that he may not care about it being whole. He may not care about whether it's in shards, but he does care that it's still here. If it's not here, he won't get the money. If it's not here, he won't get the payroll. So he wants its existence. So what you see from this is that Rotze b'kiyumo is not problematic. If that's the case, then why is it problematic for you to wait around for him to monetize this item in order to give you the money to pay you back? Elomra Papa, Yerushat Ager Kamart? When you scream at Yerushat Ager, Shiny Yerushat Ager, Dakilu Bat Rabbonon. The Yerushat Ager is different because there the Chachamim were Mekil. Gzeira Shemi Yachzor Lekil Kudo. Because maybe he'll go back to his old ways. Over here, there's a huge Yerusha coming, and now he has to make a decision. Either he has to now abstain from taking any of the Yerusha and stay a Jew, or he can go back to being a non-Jew and take all this money. It's too big a temptation for him. Therefore, the Chachamim interceded in this case to say that you're allowed to split it. That's mainly because all the items that we're dealing with here are the Rabbanan. Ger Chenit Gayer, Kakatan Shinola Dami. The Ger who converts as if he is a new person. He technically has no right to inherit his father anymore. Yusha is no longer his because he's no longer the child of the individual who's providing the Yerusha. Midra Banan, the Chachamim gave him permission to inherit that property, give him that Yusha. So since Midra Banan, they gave him that Yusha. As well as the fact that the ability now to divide it up, or the problems that we're dealing with here, are rabbinic in nature. Therefore, the Chachamim, just like they gave him the Yerusha, when they gave him the Yerusha, they did it in a way that would make it permissible for him to take it. And that's why you can't prove anything from that case over there as to why Rotzeh B'Kiyumo is mutar. Rotzeh B'Kiyumo over there is mutar only because it's a unique case of a ger, and we want to stop the ger from having been tempted to go back to being a goy just to get his Yerusha. So over there, we allow Rotzeh B'Kiyumo, but generally, we would not allow Rotzeh B'Kiyumo. And therefore, if the goy says to you, hang out here, I'm going to sell my avodah zarah to pay you back, and you want that avodah zarah to last until he gets you the money, that is problematic. Now, the Rabbeinu Yitzchak here in the Bali Tosfot deal with an issue that is a serious issue. That means that any goy who goes ahead and borrows money from a Jew has a huge way to get out of the problem. He'll say to the Jew, listen, I'm sorry, I know I borrowed the money and I really want to pay you back, but I have to sell this avodah zarah to give you the money back. All of a sudden, the money becomes a sword for the Jew to take, and the Jew's out of his loan. Rabbi Yitzchak Hayami Dakdek, Mizel Lashon, Hamtem Lo, Komar, In Chaloholi Parami Makom Echer. I have no other ability to pay you back, except from this item. The only time it's a problem is when this is the only money that he has to pay him back. In that case, you will say to Yomo, you want the item to stay around, because if he doesn't monetize this, you are not getting paid back. But if he has other assets, and he just chooses to use this asset as the mechanism for paying you back, over there it's okay. Even though you want it to stay around so you can monetize it, if he doesn't do that, he has other assets that you can go after. In that case, it's not a problem. If he has a guarantor that will back him up, or he has the ability to pay out of other assets, just because he says, wait around, I'm going to sell the avodah zarah, that doesn't matter. Otherwise, every goy has a way to get out of repaying the Jew and just say, I'm signing my avodah zarah for you, and then he doesn't have to pay it back anymore because the Jew won't accept the repayment, and that'll be a problem. Where it says, Tanya nami ochi, we have a braita that is supportive of what we are concluding here, but med vayim amurim, when is that true? She are shu. When they inherited aval nishtatfu asur, if they are partners, that does not work. So over here, you have two things. First of all, it's supportive of the idea that Yerusha is unique, and this is a special dispensation of the Chachamim with regards to Yerusha, but it also proves you the other thing, which is, as Bali Tosfot point out, that the Braita here is helpful in teaching you us that the reason here is because the Chachamim's special dispensation here with regards to the Ger, and not because of Breira. Two ways to explain this situation here are to say that either the reason that it's mutar over here is what's called breira. In other places in Shas, that's what the Gemara discusses with regards to this issue, which is there breira? Breira is, after we've divided up a whole unit, do we say that that division was the division all along? Here you have two brothers who are inheriting the estate of their father. The estate of his father is a unit or a single entity. Now when they inherit it, they're going to divide the estate in half. Do we say when they divide the estate in half, that the 50% ownership of each brother was always this way, and how they divided it means that from the outset, there was a division, you own half, I own half. Which half we didn't know, but now that we've already figured out which half we own, then that was true all along. All the way along. Retroactively, we each own 50% of the estate, and this was the 50%. Or, do we say that whenever they have the unit or entity as a whole, each one of them owns 50%? You own half of this, half of every item, half of all the stuff. When we divide it up, then we're basically exchanging between us. We're basically bartering between us to create that division. But truthfully, we all had joint ownership. So the way you could have explained the reason that it's mutar over here is because of breira, which is that because we, after the fact, divided it up, then that shows you that that was the case all along. So that would be the simplest way to explain this breita. The reason that it's not true over here is because if it was a din of breira, breira would work even in Yerusha, but also would work by a partnership. If you're dividing the assets of a partnership, then breira should also make it that what I take is mine, what you take is yours, and there should be no problem. Yet the Chachamim say it's asur. The fact that they say it's asur shows you that breira doesn't work over here. The whole reason that this works over here is because of the dispensation of Yerusha, and this Braita proves that that's the reasoning behind what we said over here. Hadar Yatvu Bikamarailu. So then they continued to sit there together, and they proposed the following question. Ger Toshav, Mahu Shivatel Avodat Kochavim. A Ger Toshav, which the Gemara in 1 second will explain what a Ger Toshav is, or what the definition of a Ger Toshav is, but one of the major aspects of a Ger Toshav is that he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah. So can he be Mivatel Avodah Zarah? Earlier in the Masechta, we had a Mishnah that told us, a Jew cannot be Mivatel the Avodah Zarah of a Goy, but a Goy can be Mivatel the Avodah Zarah of another Goy. This Ger Toshav sits somewhere in between the two. He doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, but he's not Jewish. So what is his status with regards to the ability to be Mivatel Avodah Zarah? The Polach Mivatil, the Lo Polach Lo Mivatil, is the principle someone who worships Avodah Zarah can't be Mivatil or Avodah Zarah. The one who doesn't worship cannot. So that would preclude the Ger Toshav. Well, Dilma Kol, the Bar Minei Mivatil. As long as if you're of the same type, meaning that you're a non-Jew, then you have the ability to Mivatil it. V'hai Bar Mineu. And the Ger Toshav is a Goy. It's not a Jew, and therefore he has the right to Mivatil it, even though he's not worshiping Avodah Zarah. So Amaru Rav Nachman, again, Rav Nachman answers them, Mistavro, the Poloch Mivatil, the Lo Poloch, Lo Mivatil. If you worship Avodah Zarah, then you have the right to be Mivatil it. If you don't worship Avodah Zarah, you don't have the right to Mivatil it, and that means that a Ger Toshav would be precluded from this capacity or ability to be Mivatil Avodah Zarah. Now, even though the Baya Tosafot ask over here, based on what we said back in Daf Mem Bet Amud Aleph, that even a Jew could be Mivatil the Avodah Zarah of a Goy, had it not been for the fear that we thought he might pick it up first before he's Mivatil it. Once he picks it up, it comes the Jew's Avodah Zarah, and you can't be Mivatil it. So, Altu, he might pick it up, we say that he can't be Mivatil Avodah Zarah. Over here, certainly, then a Ger Toshav should be able to Mivatil Avodah Zarah. Baya Tosafot say that that Shita, or that reasoning in the Mishnah, was only according to Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, according to Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan disagreed with that, and Rabbi Yochanan believes that a Jew cannot be Mivatel Avodah Zarah, period. And therefore, over here too, a Ger Toshav cannot be Mivatel Avodah Zarah based on Rav Nachman's conclusion. Meitavei, is that really true? Yisrael Shematza Avodat Kochavim Bashuk. He finds Avodah Zarah, Ad Shelo Batel Yado, before it comes into his possession, Omer Lovedu Kochavim Mivatel. He goes over to a Novi Kochavim and says, be Mivatel it, so that when he takes it, this Hefker item, he's not going to have a problem getting hana from it. Mishabatali Yado, once he takes possession of it, ain't no mer levedu kochavim mivatel. He can't be mivatel it anymore. Mibnei shamru, because of the Mishnah that we quoted from earlier. Oved kochavim mivatel avodat kochavim shelo v'shel chaveiro. And oved kochavim can mivatel his own avodah zarah as well as his friend's avodah zarah. Bein obda, ben she'enu obda. Whether he worships it or doesn't worship it. My obda, or my she'enu obda. What does it mean that he worships it or doesn't worship it? Ilema idvid oved kochavim. If you say they both are worshippers of Avodah Zarah, haynu shelo v'shel chaveiro. Isn't that what we just said in the ratio of that Mishnah, which is that he's able to mivatel his own and his friends of Avodah Zarah? El alav, the meaning of ovda means someone who worships Avodah Zarah. My sheinu ovda, and who is someone who doesn't worship Avodah Zarah? Ger Toshav. Ushma mina. From this, you would conclude that Ger Toshav not mivatel. That he's also maybe able to be Mivatel. The first half of the Mishnah tells you, an Ovi Kuchavim, who worships Avodah Zarah, can be Mivatel his own Avodah Zarah and someone else's Avodah Zarah. The second half says, whether he's a worshiper of Avodah Zarah, whether he's not a worshiper of Avodah Zarah, you're allowed to be Mivatel it. That would seem to indicate that a Ger Toshav has the right to be Mivatel it. Says, lo, the Olam Eimelecha Idividi Ovi Kuchavim. Both parts of the Mishnah are speaking about someone who worships Avodah Zarah. Ukomar, Tainu Shalom Shalom Chaveiro. But then how is that differentiated from the first part of the Mishnah that says he can mivatel his and his friends of Avodah Zarah? Reisha zevezele po'or, vezevezele markulis. The first half of the Mishnah tells you, if you both worship the same idol, that you can be mivatel your idol, as well as his idol, because you're both worshiping the same Avodah Zarah. Seifa, the Chiddush and the Seifa is, zele po'or, vezele markulis. If this guy worships the po'or, he can steal mivatel the other goys of Avodah Zarah who worships a different Avodah Zarah. So that's the Chiddush of the Seifa. You have the Reish and the Seifa now teaching you, not only someone who worships Avodah Zarah, worships the same Avodah Zarah, can mivatel his and his friends, but even someone who worships a different Avodah Zarah, can mivatel his friends Avodah Zarah. And then you don't have a question on Rav Nachman's conclusion. But now the Gemara asks, Meitavei, Ezu Ger Toshav. Tell me please, what is a Ger Toshav? You're using a terminology that is undefined. You have to define for me what is a ger tushav. Kol shekibel alav bifnei gimel chaverim. Anybody who accepts in front of three people, shelo lavod avodat kochavim, in order not to worship avodah zarah, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says there's only one qualification for the being ger tushav, and that is that he renounces avodah zarah in front of three people. Chachamim omrim, kol shekibel alav sheva mitzvot, shekiblu aleihem bnei noach. It has to be an acceptance of the full seven mitzvot b'nei Noach in front of a Beit Din, in front of three individuals, in order for them to be classified as a ger tushav. Achamim omrim, elu lo ba lichlal ger tushav. The definition of Rabbi Meir and Achamim does not make him into a ger tushav. Eloezu ger tushav, according to the Achamim, what is a ger tushav? Ze ger ochel nevelot, shekibel alav v'kayim kol mitzvot amurot b'torah chutz mi'isur nevelot. This is a goy who accepted, basically, voluntarily, to keep all the mitzvot of the Torah, with the exception of eating nevelot. Because the Torah awards to the ger toshav nevelot. As the pasuk says, lo tochlu kol nevela la ger asher bishacharecha titnena v'achala, o machor lenachri gam kadosh atah l'shem lokecha, lo tebashel gdi b'chalei bimo. So that pasuk in Parshut Vayei says that the ger is entitled, and the ger there was being met as a ger toshav, is entitled to the nevela. And that's the unique standing of nevela vis-a-vis the ger toshav. So one thing he doesn't do is keep kashrut, he doesn't keep that mitzvah, but otherwise he keeps all the mitzvot of the Torah, excluding that one mitzvah of nevela, of keeping kosher, and that is a definition of a ger toshav. So now you have here three different views as to what a ger toshav is. Rabbi Meir says he simply has to renounce avodah zarah. Chamim would say he has to accept the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. And then the more radical view, which is that he has to accept all the mitzvot chutz mei, with the exclusion of Isur Nevela or the Isur of Kashrut. Now here the Baalei Tosafot make a number of points and ask some questions. The first point is that generally we say that Achirim is Rabbi Meir. And so over here you have Achirim and Rabbi Meir found in the same Braita. So what the Baalei Tosafot say, that proves to you that not always is Achirim Rabbi Meir. He says the same thing's true. The principle of Yesh Omrim is Rabbi Notan. Not everywhere in Shas is Yesh Omrim Rabbi Notan, because sometimes Rabbi Notan is found in that same Braita or Mishnah where there's a Yesh Omrim. So over here we have Achirim and Rabbi Meir in the same Braita. It's clear that the Achirim here is not Rabbi Meir. Number two is, according to Rabbi Meir, how can it be that his renouncing of the Avodah Zarah is sufficient to make him do a Ger Toshav? Doesn't a Ben Noach have to keep Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach? And if he doesn't keep the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, he's Chayav Mita. So then, what does this fact that he keeps Avodah Zarah have any meaning here? He's not keeping the other six of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, he's going to be subject to a death penalty. So Baalei Tosafot say something very interesting over here. Bim Tomar, Halo Miyad Shavar Sheva Mitzvah Chayav Mita. Since he violates any of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, he's Chayav Mita. Yesh Lamar, D'chol Zman Shelo Danu B'Beitin Enu Chayav Mita. As long as they haven't brought him to trial, he's not chayav mita. That's very interesting. He's not classified as a walking dead man until he's brought to trial and found guilty of those violations. So even though he's violating the other six of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, and technically he is subject to a death penalty, that's not applicable until they get him at Beit Din and they found him guilty of whatever it is that he was doing. So in the meantime, he can be a ger toshav by simply renouncing the Avodah Zarah. Now, how this plays into the din of a ger toshav, the Gemara later on is going to tell us, and Baalei Tosafot note this over here, that this acceptance that makes him into a ger toshav has one nafkamina, and that's l'hachayuto, the obligation of a Jew to take care of the ger toshav. When it comes to Ovei Kochavim, a Jew has no obligation in the Torah to take care of the Ovei Kochavim. The Torah does obligate the Jew to take care of a ger toshav. Because the pasuk says, "V'chi amuch achicha umata yado imach, ve'chzakta bo ger v'toshav v'chai imach." So there's the obligation to sustain the ger toshav, to provide for him, to ensure his. It's a din d'oraita that you have to be mechaye the ger toshav. And that's the question here. The question being asked, what makes him into a ger toshav? The implications of which are l'hachayoto, to sustain him, and to be under the obligation of this pasuk of v'chai imach. What they're arguing about here is, which is the ger toshav that the Jew has an obligation to take care of? Not a question of whether they have to keep these mitzvot, don't keep these mitzvot. You have to keep all the mitzvot b'nei Noach. The only question is, what gains you the higher status of ger toshav, that's a nafkamina that a Jew must take care of this individual. The halacha, the Rambam paskins, that in order for him to be classified as a ger tushav, he has to accept all the sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. It's Rashi, seemingly here, but if you look in Sanhedrin, the Kilin HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, notes that Rashi in Sanhedrin, in Dach 70, Vav, Amud Bet, says that all he has to do is renounce the Mezor in front of three to be a ger tushav. So seemingly Rashi paskins like Rabbi Meir. There's also a third view, which is the view of the Raivud, who suggests that a ger tushav is any person who keeps all of the mitzvot chamurot b'Torah. Not only does he keep the Sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach, like the Rambam says, but in addition to that, he also keeps all of the chiyuvei karet and mitah in the Torah. So he keeps Shabbat, but only Shabbat with regards to chiyuvei karet. Other things that are not a chiyuv karet, he doesn't keep by Shabbat. So he's not shomer Shabbat, which would have been a problem. But he keeps things that are chiyuv karet, arayot, that are karet or mitah. He keeps, even though they may not be relevant to the ben Noach. Ben Noach only has a limited number of arayot. So all of these items, he keeps the more severe of the halachot, and the Raivid sees the example of Nevelah as being exactly that. It's an example of the type of mitzvot he doesn't keep, which are simple, lavin. But he keeps all the mitzvot that are chamurot. So that's a third view within the poskim as to what is required in order to be a ger toshav. Miyachdin etzlo yayin, ve'im mafkidin etzlo yayin. One is allowed to, the way Rashi says it over here, deposit for short duration with a ger toshav is wine. Vei mafkidin etzlo. Mafkid is to leave it there for a long duration. So here we have, by a ger tushav, a different din than a goy. By a goy, you can't leave your wine with him at all, because we have fears, both of him swapping out the wine with his wine, as well as the fact that he might touch the wine, and then you have a problem of yayin nesech. So you can't leave your wine with a goy for any duration, short or long duration. On the other hand, by a ger tushav, we say that he can leave it with him for a short duration, can't leave it with him for a long duration. Now, even in a short duration, you can leave with the goy if he has no idea that you're leaving. If he thinks that you might show up at any moment, then he is mirtak. He's fearful of you. It's the equivalent of having a mashkiach yotzei v'nichnas, which you can surprise him at any time. Therefore, he's too fearful to do anything because he can get caught. So that, even by a full-fledged goy, is mutar. So the case here must be a case where he tells him, I'm going over here. I'm traveling for this distance, and I'm going to be away for 2 days, I'm going to be away for an hour, whatever the duration is that's called miyachdim, then he discloses that information to him. By a goy, that would be problematic. By a ger tushav, that's mutar. Mafkidin, if you're going to leave it with him for a year or 2 years, then it's a problem. Where the threshold here is not clear, where you switch from miyachdim to mafkidin, but let's just use the terms of short duration and long duration. The question is, why is there a difference between the two? So Rashi over here in the Gemara gives the explanation as Da Kevan Delo Polach Lo Noga Delo Menasech. The fact that he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah means he's not going to touch the wine. He's not going to be Menasech the wine. Ulamaga Uve Kuchavim Da'ati Mi'alba Beito Lo Chashinan. And a goy who comes from outside is going to touch the wine. That we don't worry about. Kevan Delo Eino Hanabakach Eino Meni Chulaga. Since the ger tushav gets no benefit from that, he's not going to let him touch the Jew's wine. There's no reason for him to permit it. So then what is the problem? And to swap it out in a short time, we don't worry about it. From this you hear what Rashi is saying the problem is. We're afraid that he's going to swap it out with his own wine. And we'll deal with that in a second in the Gemara as to what the restriction of the wine of a ger tushav is. But the fear here is that he's going to swap it out. Over a short duration, we don't worry about him swapping out the wine. Over long duration, we do worry about him swapping out the wine. The Baal Tosafot say that there was an earlier version of Rashi that Rashi erased and changed to what he has here. And the Rabbeinu Tam quotes it, that he corrected his perishim, and he erased the reason is that he doesn't care. Which tells you, and the Rabbeinu Tam quotes this earlier, that Rashi's original reason as to why there's a problem with long duration and not short duration is because the ger tushav doesn't care about a non-Jew touching the wine. He himself has no interest in touching the wine because he doesn't worship it about Zerah. But he also does not prevent a non-Jew from touching the wine. And therefore, according to Rashi, in the first version of Rashi, the problem here is touching of the wine by a non-Jew. If it's there for a short duration, then there's not going to be enough Oveid Kochavim showing up, or the ger tushav is just not going to allow the guy to touch it. It's there for a very long duration. then either the goy himself will feel more empowered and touch it himself. And as the Tosafot point out, because we only have the second Rashi, the Rashi retracted that position and switched the reason to be not that he doesn't care, he does care, he won't let him touch it. The problem is that we're afraid of him swapping it out, and not the problem of touching. Now the Raglud enhances that view that the problem is the problem of touching. That is that for a wine to be with the goy for a short duration, he doesn't move it around. If he doesn't move it around, then the Ovid Chachamim doesn't feel empowered to touch it because of the fact that, not sure that it's the Ger Toshav. The other hand, if it's there for long duration, the goy sees the Ger Toshav carrying these barrels around and putting them down, moving them up, down, wherever he moves his barrels, he moves the Jew's barrels as well. The goy then is going to think that all the barrels belong to the Ger Toshav, and that's why he's going to go touch the wine of the Jew, even though it might be different than the wine of the Ger Toshav. And that's because he thinks it all belongs to the Ger Toshav. So that's the Raglud enhancing that original view of Rashi. But again, the Rabbeinu Tam favors heavily Rashi's second explanation, or here, the one that he changed his mind to, which is the fact that the problem here is echlufe, the swapping out of the wine, and not the problem of touching the wine. All right, we'll come back to this because that will have implications in a second for what the Gemara is about to discuss with regards to a Ger Toshav. So you can not deposit for long duration with them wine, even if the city is a majority of Jews in it. But you can deposit for a short duration with them wine, even in a city where the majority of the inhabitants are non-Jewish. Shmano ki yeno. His oil has the same din as his yayin. Gemara says, Shmano ki yeno sakadatcha. His shemen should be like the wine. Shemen mi kahavi nesech. Since when does shemen have a din of yayin nesech? Yayin has a din of yayin nesech. That's the whole problem with yayin. Shemen doesn't have that problem. Ela yeno kishmano. His wine has the same status as his shemen. Ula sha'ar kol davar hariyu kovei kuchavim. But for everything else, he has a din like an ovei kuchavim. That means he can't shech the animals. That means that he is not considered to be Neman, because he's not a Shomer Shabbat. All the things that apply to him, which we'll see, the Gemara is going to bring another Nafkamina later on, all there, he's considered to be a Goy. But with regards to Yeno, Kishmano, it's like his Shemen. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Yeno, Yayin Nesech. The wine of a Ger Toshav has the same din of Yayin Nesech like any other person. Rami Lo, Mutar Bishtia. And some say that it is Mutar with drinking. Which means now that you have three different views here as to what the status of the yayin of a Ger Toshav is. They're comparing it to shemen in the first case, which would imply that it's asur b'shtia mutar b'hana'a. There's another position, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's asur l'gamrei, asur b'shtia and hana'a. They have a third position, which is the other extreme, which is it's even mutar b'shtia. So we'll come back to this about the Pesach in 1 second, but just to understand their positions. With regards to those that say the yayin is like the shemen, that is when the Takanav Shemen was still in place. Remember earlier on, we had these Zerot Chachamim, that they were Gozer Pitan Vishmanam Atu Yenam, Yenam Atu Bneutehem, and Bneutehem Atu Davar Acher. So over there, the Gemara speaks about the fact that over time, the Takana, or the Zerav Shemen fell apart, or was rescinded by the Peitin of Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. So now, if it was rescinded, then the shem and the oil of an Ovei Kuchavim is not Asur at all. If that's the case, when you compare Yayin to the shem, it would mean there's no Isur. That doesn't make any sense, because that's the third opinion in the Braita here. So rather, it must mean, but while the din of the shem was still intact, which is that it was Asur to drink the shem, but it was not Asur Bana, the Yayin has that same status. Now, why would that be? If the wine is Asur, it should be Asur the Gamre, like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says. So this goes back to something we discussed earlier, and here the Rashba brings up his position that he had earlier in the Masechta, which is that the stages in which the Yayin became Asur. And that is, the Rashba believes that it was a two-stage process that Yayin became Asur. The first age of Isur was Mishum Benotehem. Similar to Pat and Shemin, Yayin was Asur Bishtiyah because of the possibility that it would lead to intermarriage or lead to socialization. Afterwards, the Chachamim saw that Yayin Nesech was a huge problem. On top of that, they added on an additional restriction of Isur Hana'ah because of the Yayin Nesech problem. So over here, we've eliminated the Yayin Nesech problem because he's a Ger Toshav, then what you're left with is the Isur Shtiyah, the original Isur Shtiyah, and not the Isur of Yayin Nesek. That works well according to the Rashba, who believes that that's how the Takanah came about. For the Rabbeinu Tam, who sees it just the opposite, and thinks that the original Gezeirah was Yayin Nesek, and then the latter Gezeirah was the Isur of Bitan and Shmanam, then it's much harder to argue that the Yayin over here should be any different. Once they were Gozer and Yayin Nesek, so if it applied, it applied to the Ger Toshav. It didn't apply to him, it didn't apply to him at all. The answer might be, is because we view the Yayin of the Ger Toshav as being Stam Yenam, and not Yayin Nesech. Stam Yenam is still Asur Ba'anah. The answer is that over here, the Chachamim gave a dispensation, given the fact that he's a Ger Toshav, that his Stam Yenam is different than normal Stam Yenam. So that's the way to deal with it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes, gonna make it Asur, it's not only Asur, the Shtiyah is a Surbana. That's either because the Gzeirah is a Stam Gzeirah and applies to everyone, or the fear is that the Ger Toshav is not Makbid on the Magav, the Goy, and therefore the problem of its Stam Yenam or Yayin Nesek here is not because of the Ger Toshav himself, but because of the accessibility of that wine to other Goyim who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Those that are Matir B'Shtiyah think that the application of Yayin Nesek or the Isur of Stam Yenam doesn't apply to a Ger Toshav. The whole Takanah, the whole Gzeirah, had to do with people who are worshipping Avodah Zarah. Even though Mishum Benotehem is still relevant by the Ger Toshav, so we don't want to intermarry with the Ger Toshav, nevertheless, the Yayin was not a part of that Gzeirah, and we don't worry about it either because once you take away Yayin Nesek, we take away the whole reason for the Gzeirah. This would be much more akin to the Rabbeinu Tam's view that the original Gzeirah was Mishum Yayin Nesek, and then the Benotehem was added on later, Bitan and Shmanam. If that's the case, then the only reason, or the original reason behind the problem with Yayin is Yayin Nesek. Once you eliminate that reason, Mishum Benotehem also falls away because that's a much later Takana. And so the din here is that it is not a Sur Ba'ana'ah because it's not Yayin Nesek. That also makes it Mutar B'Shtiyah because there's no din or Gzeirah of Yayin at all. Or because we're not so worried about intermarriage with the Ger Toshav, it's not such a common occurrence. So then, if you go back to the Baal Tosafot, he says, "Ufi perush ein lo chiyach birur shein mutar magag Ger Toshav b'yino shel Yisrael." Based on this, you cannot prove anything about whether if a Ger Toshav comes into contact with the Jew's wine, that a hatiro b'shtiyah, to say that's mutar b'shtiyah, because we're not worried about him touching it, and he doesn't let other people touch it. Because over here, we say that the problem is echlufe, that he might swap out the wine, not that a goy or he might come into contact with the wine. But, Arbeinu Yitzchok Kotov, b'yachdin etzlo yayin, why are you allowed to put the yayin with him for short duration? Afil b'ir shubav over the chavim perish, the mutar mago'o b'shtiyah. That's because when he touches it, it is mutar b'shtiyah, and it does not make it asur. Because the fact that we don't worry about the mago of the Ger Toshav in the short duration deposit would not make it asur b'shtiyah. Tanya behedya mago mutar. So then why does it just say it explicitly over here that when he touches it, it's mutar? The Rabbuta Kamashmalan is teaching us a chiddush that even in a city where it's rov over the kuchavim, we don't worry about the fact that a goy is going to come and touch it and cause the problem. But underlying there is no problem of the Ger Toshav touching it. Based on that, the Re wanted to conclude that a Ger Toshav, not only is it mutar for you to leave your yayin there, even if he touches your yayin, it's mutar b'shtiyah. That would indicate that the Rabbeinu Yitzchak is pasking that the yayin of the Ger Toshav is mutar b'hana'ah. And called the Rabbeinu Yehuda, Maseya b'gerachad, Shema'o v'lo tavao, tzvila kira'ui. He got a brief milah, but he never did the mitzvila properly. It's actually a case that comes up in a number of times throughout the poskim, which is in a case where a person gets a brit milah, but he can't go to the mikveh because after he got the brit milah, the wound or the infection is somewhat problematic that he couldn't go to the mikveh. So he intended to go to the mikveh, but he just didn't get there. V'amar b'beit Yisrael yamim rabim, and he lived with a Jew for many years. V'nagabi yeno, and he touched his wine, v'tiro Rabbeinu Yitzchak b'shtiyah. Rabbeinu Yitzchak says it's totally fine to drink, to geperish, to ger toshav mago mutar b'shtiyah. Based on his psak, that he thinks that if a Ger Toshav touches the wine, it's mutar b'shtiyah. Koshken shemal b'kibulav ha-mitzvot. Certainly this individual who got a milah and accepted the mitzvot, certainly his touch should have no impact over here. In addition, O b'shel sofrim, when we're dealing with a din derabonon, which is the restriction over here of stam yena, so then, halach echera mekil. When it's a din derabonon, you do have to make on the most mekil opinion over here is that it's mutar b'shtiyah. And if that's mutar b'shtiya, that means that their maga is fine. V'afilu l'nishna d'gamar yeinam kishmanam, haynu mishum chatnut. And even according to the one who says that their yayin has the same din as shemen, that's the problem of intermarriage. Aval mago'o b'shal Yisrael lo yakpid. But that means that it's only true of his own wine. But if he touches a Jew's wine, lo yakpid, afukein lo ratzah Rabbeinu Yitzchak da'akel. Even though that was the case, Rabbeinu Yitzchak didn't want to be mekil, and that even though he really believed that that was the halacha, nevertheless he was not necessarily the halacha l'maisa mekil in these cases, because he was choshesh for the fact that maybe his explanation was wrong, because the way that Rashi explains the Gemara would not indicate that the mago of an ger toshav is mutar. So k'tani miha, nevertheless you see from here, u'mshan kol d'rav ari u'koyevei kochavim. For anything else, he has a status like an ovei kochavim. The mai hilchata. What halacha does that have application for, the fact that he's deemed to be an ovei avodah zarah? Lav d'mevata avodat kochavim kovei kochavim. Must be that he gets that status that he's allowed to be mevatel, annul, avodah zarah. And that's why he's considered like an ovei kochavim. That's not what it's for. They ten reshut, l'batel reshut. In order to give reshut, or be mevatel reshut, he has a status like an ovei kochavim, which is a din erevin, which we're going to explain in 1 second. But what you see from here is, interestingly enough, there are many nafkaminot with regards to a geret toshav that he's considered to be like a goy. But what the Gemara here is looking for is a nafkaminot where you would have a havamina to believe that he shouldn't be like a goy in this case. So in the first instance, you had a havamina that he shouldn't be like a goy because he doesn't worship a barzara. So the Gemara answer is no, he's an obey kochavim that can be a vator barzara. Then the Gemara rejects that as the explanation, comes to Erevin. But Erevin also, you would have thought that he has the same status as a Jew who's a mumar, which we'll see in a second, which is that he keeps some of the mitzvot, not all of the mitzvot, and therefore his status should be like a Jew. Kamash malan, that he's considered like an obey kochavim. The fact that he's an obey kochavim by shechita is not a chiddush. Of course he's an obey kochavim. He doesn't keep the mitzvah of shechita. Why should he be considered anything by the mitzvah of shechita? And that's especially true for those that believe that a ger toshav is keeping a lot of mitzvot, like the Raivud, who thinks that he's keeping tons of mitzvot. That would be especially true over here, that there would be a havamina that he should be included as a Jew and not as a non-Jew. And that is, Kedetanya, we have a braita from Erevin. Yisrael mumar, mishamer shabbato bashuk. If he keeps Shabbat in public, he is a mechalal Shabbat in private, but not bifrahesya, mivatel reshut. He has a right to annul his possession in the chatzer. She'ein mishamer shabbato bashuk. If he's a mechalal Shabbat bifrahesya, ein mevatel reshut. Then he's like a goy, and he cannot be mevatel as reshut. Mipnei shamru. Because Yisrael notain reshut to mevatel reshut. A Jew can't give his reshut, or he can annul his reshut. Whether there's enough kamina between these two languages isn't clear. Many of the Rishonim believe that they're synonymous. Just two ways of saying the same thing. Although the Rambam in the Parash Mishnayot differentiates between whether he gave the permission before Shabbat or after Shabbat. Gave it before Shabbat, it's called notain reshut. Gave the permission after Shabbat started, it's called mevatel reshut. Ube'ovei kochavim ad shiskor. And the ube'ovei kochavim, the only way to solve the problem is until you rent it. Ketzad, how does it work here to be mevatel reshut? Omer lo reshuti kenu yalach. My ownership here is given over to you. Reshuti mevutel alach. My ownership here is annulled to you. Kana vein tzarech liskot. That's sufficient, and you don't actually have to take possession of the property. And since this is really just a halachic fiction in order to prevent people from coming to the wrong conclusion, to know that he annuls or gives over his possession of his property, we don't need you to actually accept it and make a kinyan on it for it to be binding. What we're speaking about here is an Eruv Chatzerot. Eruv Chatzerot is what allows the parties in a Chatzer to carry. The way that Chazal instituted it is that you have many houses that are around a Chatzer. So the Chatzer starts to look like a quasi-public domain. We don't want people to do is think that it's a public domain you can carry in it, because then people then extrapolate that and then carry in real Reshut HaRabim, which is an Issur D'Oraita. So they instituted Eruv Chatzerot, which is a way to join all the ownership of the parties that are in there, and to make it into basically, it's as if one person owns it, or to make it into a Reshut HaYachid in a way that is demonstrated through a joining of all the parties that are there. So the normal way that you do that in Eruv Chatzerot is that everybody participates in the loaves of bread that are there. You bring a meal together, and those meals that you bring together are your shared ownership that makes you into a single owner. And then you place it with one of the residents of the chatzer, as if he is the owner of the whole chatzer, and there's a single owner. And that halachic fiction will then make sure people know that this is unique to the chatzer that you're allowed to carry here, even though there are multiple parties, but you can't do that in Rishut Rabim. Now, it only works if all the houses that are on this chatzer participate in the Erev Chatzerot. If any one of the houses does not participate, it ruins the Erev Chatzerot. Because it means that there's another ownership here. It's not just the single ownership of the Eruv Chatzerot. There's a second party there that is exerting ownership because he's outside the Eruv Chatzerot. So if there is a Jew who, for whatever reason, didn't participate in the Eruv Chatzerot, which would ruin the Eruv Chatzerot, he can be mevatel his reshut. He can annul his ownership. He can give over his ownership to the person holding the Eruv Chatzerot, and that would make it that it's mutar. That is only true if it is a Jew that is a generally a Shomer Mitzvot. Even though he's Mechalo Shabbat B'tzinah, he doesn't do it in public. If he's Mechalo Shabbat B'Fahetzia, he has the same din as a Goy, and he can't be Mevatel as Rishut. What about a Goy that's living there in the Chatzer? Or this Mechalo Shabbat B'Fahetzia that's there? How do you make an Erev Chatzerot? You score it. You have to rent their property. You have to somehow take possession of their property. You can either do that by renting it from them, or you can do it, today they use eminent domain, that the government technically has full ownership over all the land, and therefore they rent it from the government in order to do that. So that is how you deal with the Erev Chatzerot. What the Gemara is suggesting now is the fact that a Ger Toshav, as a din like a Goy, has application over here, which is that he will not be able to be mevatel his reshut into the Chatzer in order to make it a kosher Erev Chatzerot. You'd have to rent from him like you would have to rent from a Goy. And again, here you would have a havamina that he should not be like a Goy because he keeps some of the mitzvot. Again, the more mitzvot you think he has to keep, the more that would be applicable over here. Kamash Malan, that he has a din like a Goy. So now we have a interesting case here. Rabbi Yehuda, shoder le korbono le abidrana v'yomei dam. Rabbi Yehuda sent, now Rashi says over here, korban is not really a korban, rather a teshura, which is a gift. He sent them a gift, not a korban. Korban would be obviously very problematic. He sent them a gift to a bidarno who is a goy, an ovid kochamim, on his holiday. Then that goes back to the beginning of the Masechta. You're not allowed to send gifts to an ovid kochamim on their holidays. Amar, he said, yedanabe to lo palach levadat kochamim. I know that he doesn't worship avodah zarah. Since I know he doesn't worship avodah zarah, when I send the gift on Yom Edam, I don't have any of the problems that the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta says when you gift them, they're going to go and thank their God. They're going to worship, use it towards the worship of their God. No, that's applicable because he doesn't worship avodah zarah. Amalei Rav Yosef, Atanya, what about what we just said in the Gemara? Ezu ger toshav. You only have a classification of ger toshav. Kosh kibel ala b'fnei gimel chamerim shlo la'avod avodat kochamim. You're not deemed to be a ger toshav until you accept in front of three people not to worship avodah zarah. So how can you over here claim that he's not a worshiper of avodah zarah? He never accepted in front of three people renouncing of avodah zarah. So kitanya hi lahachayoto. That's given the status of ger toshav, where there'll be an obligation on the Jew to take care of this goy. Ba'ama rabba barachana rabbi yochanan ger toshav shavru alav yubet chodesh. You have a ger toshav who is a ger toshav for 12 months below mal, and he doesn't get a brit milah. Hari hu kemin shabov de kochavim. Has the same status as a min and obedei kochavim. So how do you have here a case where it's not a problem to gift him if a goy doesn't worship avodah zarah? After 12 months, he gets the status of a goy. Hatam kagon shekibel alav damul. That's only if he accepted also to get a brit milah v'lo mal. In the end, he doesn't do the milah. He doesn't carry through on what he said he was going to do. But in a case where he never accepted to take a brit milah or never claimed that he's going to become a ger tzedek, he can remain a ger toshav. So as far as a ger toshav is concerned, that gives him the status that then obligates us to take care of him, to sustain him, take care of him, protect him. That comes from being a ger toshav. Independent of that, if a goy doesn't worship avodah zarah, then there's no problem of gifting him something because you have no fears of him using the gift towards the avodah zarah, thanking the God of the avodah zarah for it. And therefore, it's not a problem to gift him, even if he's not qualified as a ger toshav, he can still be a person that doesn't worship avodah zarah. Obviously, he has nafkaminot in the modern day, much of what Tosafot spoke about earlier in the Masechta, which is if the goyim amongst us are not considered to be obedei avodah zarah, then this would seemingly permit one to gift them or give them gifts on their holidays, as long as we know that they don't worship avodah zarah, which if you believe the Baal Tosafot, what they do is not considered to be avodah zarah, Or it's minhag avodeim b'yadeim, they don't really worship the avodah zarah, they just keep these practices. So maybe the whole problem of gifting would go away. And now we saw earlier in the Masechta that the Rashi believed that when it came to the days before and the days afterwards, that wasn't a problem anymore, that we do transact with them. He brings a number of reasons, including the fact it would be impossible, but this would be another reason as to why it would be permissible, even though Rashi was not willing then to be matir on the Yom Eidam itself. This would even provide that possibility that it would apply by Yom Eidam as well. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Samachei Amud Aleph.